So what were you, what was the go last night? You guys are giggling
No,
before each
I'll
show.
start it off. I'll start it off.
All right.
Sorry, Jonesy. That's good, but
He's a has to be in control. Sam Philly, the narcissist.
So tell me about last night. No, nah, yeah. Shut it down. Sorry, mate. I'll do that. It's my show.
For those that are still listening, who have made it this far, we've got nothing today, so we're just going to put this out.
This is the biggest pile of garbage ever produced in podcast history.
We had this a while ago, though, eh, where we just fucked it, and then we like, oh, we'll just start again. And then we pumped out a real good one.
Yeah.
That was where we binned 45 minutes one time a couple of years ago. And we just said, that's it. It's done. Because we started going down rabbit holes. We were like, if we run that, we could be in some pretty hefty legal shit.
I'm just trying to think. I could tell you a story about a guy that spat on me.
Yeah. Recently.
My last race.
Yeah, okay. Tell us about that.
We'll just get talking and it'll flow, won't it? Mm-hmm.
Did you watch any of the Oscars?
No. Nah, well, who
won?
Oppenheimer.
Yeah,
but Robert, yeah. What's his name? Al Pacino.
Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, he won. Robert Downey Jr., first Oscar. But Al Pacino read out Best Picture, and he's lost the plot. Like,
really?
It's a simple job. You go, and the winner is, and you open up, and you go, Oppenheimer. He was fumbling around, and he's reading, he goes, yeah, so, okay, I think I read Oppenheimer. And that's how he announced it. And everyone's like, looking around, and he goes, no, it's Oppenheimer. And everyone's like, oh, like, you know, okay. Like, that's the biggest moment, like, but because he's such an icon of Hollywood, who's going to pull him aside and say, hey, mate, you fucked
Did they up. Do like a Ricky Gervais, right? Did they do like a, who hosted it?
A Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, yeah.
And they had John Cena come out in the booth, like Starkers, holding a note. You know, they're just trying everything to get, like, clicks now. But ever since Will Smith decked Chris Rock, like, it's going to be hard to top that in terms of, like, clicks. I'm looking forward to when the 10-year ban expires on Will Smith, so 2032 when he comes back.
Did he get a 10-year ban from the Oscars?
Yeah. 10
Who,
years.
Ricky Gervais?
No, Will Smith.
Oh, really? Play the intro then, or what are we going to do?
I'll just play the intro and we'll see what happens, eh? Let's just run the intro and wing it like we always do and see what comes out of it.
Let's get ready to rumble! Front kick.
Just getting pulled in basketball chat.
My radar's going pretty hard at the moment. I think we should.
Will you shut up, man? Person?
That escalated quickly. Oh,
we're going to need to get some more qualified guests on the show, eh?
I like how in the intro, the first thing it says is when Jonesy goes, let's just roll the intro and just see what comes out. Like, sometimes that doesn't pay off. Nine times out of 10, it does, but sometimes it doesn't. There's a clock behind me that says 10:35 now, roughly.
Mm.
This said 10:09 when we first started recording. So this is take two. We've just fucking scrubbed 30.
What happens is, ever since we had that legal, we just become a little bit more sensitive after that note from that cease and desist once, naming someone.
Yeah.
In a fight. Actually, I got a fight story. Not really a fight story, but a story. And I was going
to... He talks about getting a cease and desist. He goes, well, I'll open the batting with a fight story.
Oh, we had a good night last night. We had dinner together at Hippie's place, and we were just going down the rabbit hole of just war stories. Fuck, it was funny.
Do you know what's interesting? The war stories for me, like, okay, not like necessarily like scraps or encounters or, you know, altercations, let's call them. They still continue. But like the war stories, like the, like, holy fuck, remember when we did that? And just these outrageous stories about like just feats that have happened. They all stopped. Like none of those stories were later than say 2017, 18?
Yeah. At a push. Yeah.
At a push.
Or 18, yeah, maybe 18.
Like the story, like those things of just crazy.
So cycling's getting softer Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't know what it is, eh? Because we were like talking about this. We're talking about the stage.
You're getting more control or more measured, maybe. I don't know.
And I don't know what it is. And it's like, maybe because it's always hard now, maybe we just, I'm not racing anymore, but maybe you just become desensitized to it in some degree. But the story we're talking about, 2015 Giro, stage 19. And there was you don't get stories like that anymore, but like, you don't get, I don't know why, but like that stage of the 2015 Giro was like fucking insane. It was like 230K or something, like 5,000 meters of climbing or whatever. And the first 100K was flat. And it was just like, it was Astana versus Saxo Bank. It was Contador versus Aru, just going like hammer and tongs, the whole Giro. And maybe because that whole Giro was just insane, that this like, it almost like came to a climax on stage 19 when it was just this, just fuck, like I finished 50. I was saying to the guys, I finished 50th on the stage. It's this mountain stage. I was like 50th or 50 something, and I was like nearly 50 minutes behind. And the groupetto rolled in at like an hour 10 or an hour 15. It was like there was just so many things going on.
And we were telling stories about how like different times with guys we know have been crying on the bike, just like breaking down in tears, crying as they're riding along. And I haven't seen a guy cry on the bike at least for like 5 years. When was the last time a guy riding along crying because he's so fucked? And I have a theory on it. I have a theory.
Maybe the glasses are better. You can't see it.
Maybe. But my theory on it is that 45, 50% of the time, we were just hunger bombed. We just weren't eating enough. And you know, we like I'm a bit hungry this morning. Like I woke up hungry, staying at a fucking hotel at the top of the mountain, drive down here. And I just noticed I'm just pissed off, you know, because I'm hungry and I had some food and I'm chill out a bit. So I wonder if like the emotions of being hungry, you're so tired and like losing 50 minutes and being 50th, that's because there's another 100 guys that probably just completely got the hunger knock and they just, and now we all know to eat. I mean, that's one theory, but like the epic levels of fatigue of guys just like, or the other thing is maybe when you're so fucked now, like we were talking about another one of our mates, the whole goal of him back in his one of his first grand tours was just, all right, the whole team just try and help this guy survive the Giro, you know? And I wonder if now that teams would just, if you were sick, you'd just pull him out.
And I got another theory as well. Do you reckon there's just the way that like these guys race now, like the top guys, and you know, case in point, Pogacar going off the front 80K to go in Strada, like, do you reckon we're just not surprised by that stuff anymore? Like, you know, whereas like we used to get, you'd get to the stage in the Giro, like again, where it just was like insane. It was just like, we were just like, fuck me, where did that come from? That was so fucking hard. Whereas like now you're like, oh, of course he did that. You know, like you're just not surprised by that crazy shit anymore.
I mean, I was still surprised by Pogacar's ride. I think that might've been the best ride I've ever seen.
But yeah.
Oh, no, I take your point. I mean, but I don't.
Do you reckon 99% of the pelotons just accepted defeat before the start of the stage?
I like in the interview, it's just like, where are you going to attack? It's like, oh, 80K to go. Gets to 80K to go. Everyone's like, oh, fuck, he attacked.
Yeah. I fucking told you.
Told you.
Wasn't lying. Yeah, that was pretty insane, though. Eh? But like, just the fact that he went there. And like, surely, I wonder. I'd love to be like a in his brain, just in those moments where like he goes, and then okay, it's like he knows he's going to go there. But surely he was expecting like at least either if they didn't follow him, eventually a few guys came across, and it's like okay, now we're racing from a group of 5 80K to go.
I think that's what he had in mind. I don't think I'm solo.
Surely he never thought, I'll attack here, no one will follow me, and I'll win by Strada Bianchi by 3 minutes.
But not only that, when he comes in the finish line, he's just grinning. Looks like it's just been a fucking stride.
What I like about that, you know how the camera got close to him like 3K to go and he had like a 4 minute lead and stuff. And he's like smiling, but he's also like, oh, maybe I should look tired. So like, you know what I mean? So he's like, starts to smile and then he goes, oh, I'm going to grimace a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I'm not really tired. But...
Do you know what? It's an interesting. I actually just came to my mind now thinking about Strada. This is interesting. So there's always this talk about should there's like this polarized opinion about whether Strada Bianchi should be a monument or not, you know? And from my side, I say no. And the reason I say no is not because it's one of the greatest, one of the best races on the calendar and most exciting races on the calendar, and it's always fucking epic. It's because the monument to the races that have been around for 100 plus years, you know, they're all long races. They're all 260K, which is shorter than what they used to be 100 years ago. But they're the oldest races on the calendar, you know. That's what makes it a monument to me. And you know, if you looked at it, the criteria for a monument in a different way, then yeah, maybe I'd agree that Strada should be a monument. But they added this extra 30K to the race this year, extra gravel, but primarily they added kilometers to the race. Do you reckon that is because they're trying to push it to the point where it is a 260K classic, and then they can say, okay, well, it's monument distance now, what's your fucking argument? Is that doing it?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because, like, if they're trying to do that, then how the race played out just completely spat in the face of that, because you know how, like, in the New Zealand Nationals, they often made it, like, 100K or 120. Like, it used to be, like, 120K, even in Cambridge. And you'd be like, well, why is it 120K? And they'd be like, well, if we make it 180, there'll be 10 finishes. And then, you know, so they go, oh, well, we're making it a longer race to make it more exciting. Well, then Pogacar's just going to win by more. Going to make it easier. It's like Down Under being such an exciting race because it's the easiest race of the year. You know, so there's so many guys in competition. And, you know, like the gaps are so small. There's only like fifth place at 20 seconds or something after a week of racing. Whereas like when the race is so hard, the best guy just wins by more.
Yeah,
that's why they should do shorter stages for big grandies and that. Keep it close.
And I would say like generally that's kind of becoming the theme now. Like you still get like maybe at the Giro you'll still get a couple of big long days, but that's also the Giro, you know. Like, and that's, I'm also cool with that because that's like I as much as I want the sport to progress and move forward, and there's a lot of things that need to change, there's some things that I'm happy to stay the same. Like,
well, I think that's part of the sport. That fatigue you get after some crazy 200K mountain stage, that's actually when you also see who's the best. You know, there's a lot of guys that can sort of bluff through like just raw power. You know, I would say like a good example is like Paris-Nice, being like the guy that wins Paris-Nice, like Jorgensen, unreal ride, is not the guy that would beat Remco in a grand tour.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. And the tour heads, the tour is a little bit, I'd say, generally more shorter stages now, and it's good. I like that as well. But yeah, I don't know. Like going back to the monument debate about Strada, it's like it is quite a polarized view, and like I can understand why people think it should be a monument from a sporting perspective. And I probably tend to agree with that, but I still stand by the fact that the monuments are the ones that have been around for 100 years, and there's a massive history there. That's what makes it a monument.
The history thing's interesting, eh? Because like I think about like we were just in like racing UAE. I was racing UAE on the way over here, and there was times we were just riding through the middle of fucking nowhere. No one gave a shit. It was you know, it was just you. No one's watching the race. You're like, and you just kind of think like, it's crazy that this race is like, you know, there's other races that are steeped in history, full of people that's so enthusiastic. Like Volta Catalunya is coming up, you know, and like one of the most passionate races of the year. You know, people
it's
love
the oldest, it. Country. I think it's the oldest week long stage race on the calendar.
Yeah, Catalunya. It's like 107 years old or something.
Yeah,
it's nuts.
Shit, I didn't know that.
But like, you know, like it's just and then like in cycling has this globalization push, which is great to bring cycling to more places. And I think it is like a really positive thing. It's also going to grow the sport with the income and all the stuff. But it's crazy that they try and give it to the riders in terms of points, in terms of prize money, in terms of, you know, whatever, the same significance that say you know, Volta Catalunya has. When you know, no one really.
You haven't really earned it.
It's not a race in the fact. It's like, you know, you ride along a highway and then you go up one hill and It's just a
different, it's a different type of race. Yeah.
Yeah. But and they're trying to shoehorn it in.
Yeah, it's categorized.
So I'm just a little bit like dark on it.
Who are you spat in your face? Wasn't
well, after our legal battles, I'm not going to say. But
tell us a rider. We always
a rider spat in your face.
We come out on top in those legal battles generally, so just have another go.
So we're riding up the hill, riding up Jebel, the long one, and this bloke, like, I'm following a teammate, and a bloke, like, smashes into my ass, and I got this whole thing. I'm like, this year I'm love and peace, nothing. So I just love looked at him, peace. just looked at him, didn't open my mouth, nothing. And then I'm riding along, a second later I hear him say, what are you going to do about it? And I went, looked back at him, didn't say anything. And he goes, yeah, thought so. All right. Fucking. And I've got like 300 meters before the next corner, and it just like starts, my brain starts ticking, twitching. You know, like,
yeah,
just twitching.
It's like me, myself, and I read.
He came around the outside.
I check on vertically.
Came around the outside, chopped in, and I just fucking smashed him, you know, like, but. Hands on the bars, you know, just like, but like fought for my wheel, you know? And he just went like hoik and just spat in my face.
Loogie.
And I lost it. I was like, oh, I'm going to kill someone. Anyway, I went to like grab the helmet. I was going to go for the helmet pulled down to the handlebars and try and hook the chin strap under the shifter or under the Garmin. I looked behind. We were like back of the group. I was on the shit house, had major jet lag. I was already cracking. I'd just come from New Zealand. I was on the way over. TV camera just sitting there, and I went, oh.
Can't you know do what? It.
And for the best, you know, I'm you know.
Do you catch up after the stage, though?
Yep.
Straight to the bus?
No buses.
Oh, yeah. But straight to their area? Wait for him?
Nah, I found him on the road before the finish.
And what was the resolution?
That it won't happen again.
Ah, nice. You've become the enforcer now, GB.
No, I wasn't enforcing him. But I think
he learned his lesson.
He realized,
never do that again.
That is,
a guy
would just crash me, you know?
Yeah. I was just going to say,
this is a great example of how you should settle instances in sport. Too many times now, and it's obviously with cameras, do things get elevated, then it goes to a tribunal or whatever. There's almost this unwritten rule too, particularly with blokes, like just sort it out yourselves half the time. Like George has gone up and obviously threatened to kill him and he's back down, but that's how you do it.
I reckon they should set up like a zone at the end of the stages or the races, call it a sort out zone or something. And it's like 5 minutes, you get 5 minutes and you can sort it out, you know, by discussion or you can get physical, but it's you're allowed to sort it like outside of the public eye. And then they go, you know, you get in the bus, you're like, oh, where's George? Oh, he's just down the sort out zone. He'll be back soon. You know?
Yeah.
And you can sort it out in there.
Yeah. I reckon that you need one guy who's a mediator, a guy that everyone likes, like a Dr. Phil type.
Serge.
And he's Serge. Yeah.
Serge would be the man.
Yeah. He'll sort it out.
It's an interesting way. Like one of my great mates is we're just down at Nationals. We went to New Zealand Nationals. And like, for me, it's one of the coolest weeks of the year because I get to hang out with like some awesome people. We all go down and get a house together and you start hearing war stories about old New Zealand races. And one story that just keeps popping up that I think we could probably use names. But maybe we shouldn't, just in case, because one of them's
like his brain's processing gone.
No, I just know one of them's now sending death threats to the kids. But the story of in Tour of Wellington one year, how one guy caused this huge crash, right? So basically everyone was on GC, one guy missed out, he was watching all his GC guys right away from him and he's pulling in, people aren't taking turns. And so he just massively crashes the guy on second wheel. and just puts him straight in the ditch, flipping Tamalera. Guy comes back, makes it back to the front of the group, comes up to the front of the peloton, says to the guy in second wheel, who I know really well, says to him, like, oh, you might want to go back a little bit. The guy's like, fuck, what's going on here? Eases off a bit, reaches over, grabs his handlebars. See you later.
Flipped him.
Sends him into the ditch. Flipped him into the ditch.
Gee.
Fuck, really?
Yeah. What? You might have been racing. You would have been. Yeah, you might have been racing. 2000. What year is it? I could look. I know who won the race. You might have been racing. I'll let you know later on.
That's where you need a sort out zone.
Yeah.
So that stuff doesn't, because you don't want those sorts of incidents happening on the road. Oh yeah. George has just sent me who it was in the private chat. It will remain private. Because you don't want those sorts of incidents happening on the road and affecting the outcome of the race. You don't want guys getting crashed and people's handlebars getting ripped up. But if you're over sort out zone,
what, like, if you can't sort it out? Is there like a final challenge, like an arm wrestle or something that you need to? Because you've got to have to sort it out. It can't linger.
Yeah.
How do you resolve it?
Maybe you could have overtime, maybe, in the sort out zone. So you get 5 minutes.
The thing about on the bike, you don't want to sort out on the bike largely because you've got no idea how it's going to resolve. Like, I would never ever crash someone like that because you have no idea. Like, you think, oh, they're just going to fall over and lose some skin, but they could also be paralyzed, you know? So you need like a far more, I think it can't be physical. I think it should be like a battle of wits. You know, you both get into the sealed out zone and do a Sudoku. And whoever loses,
or something.
Whoever loses has to do like some humiliating video, you know, or like ride the next day with no shoes on or something. You know what I mean? Like some, just like.
Make a crop line apology on Instagram.
Yeah, because I guess a physical one could always, you know, there's always going to be a winner and a loser, and maybe the loser's not necessarily the person who should be losing. You know?
I think it just needs to be more judgment from, in this case, how we sorted it out largely was his own team. We just had a discussion and his own team went, mate, that was fucked to him.
Yeah. But is this person a notorious hothead, or this came out of the blue?
Nah. Notorious.
Right.
When I was racing in the States in 2009, some guy spat on my face from this small American team and I just ripped his sunglasses off his face and threw them in the ditch.
It's such a feral thing.
He's like, that was my only pair. I was like, well, I fucking shouldn't have spat on my face, mate. It's my only face.
Fitting though, yeah, it's shocking.
What instinct is that? That is such a fucking filthy, like, default thing to go to.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's not good. Yeah.
What would if the UCI caught that? What would the UCI punishment be?
I reckon they'll give you a ban. Like, for sure.
You're gone.
Surely. Like, big health, like heaps of things. Like if you punch someone, you know, and it's happened before. Like, for example, when Luke Rowan, Terpstra at Dauphiné. But it happened again. It happened at the tour as well.
I don't know if that people know about that one. I think that didn't make the news. I think you've just had a little look behind the curtain there.
Oh, well, doesn't matter. Anyway, they both got disqualified.
Did they?
Yeah, I think so.
When they jumped off the bikes. No, but
there was one at the tour.
Moscon,
yeah.
Like, I think no one ever caught Rowie in Terpstra.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Or maybe they did.
Nah, yeah. I think they did. I think it was on the news, man.
Okay.
I remember Rowie getting booted out. Yeah.
No, that was Rowie and Tony Martin that got booted out.
That's what I was thinking of. Rowie and Tony Martin.
Yeah, so we don't know about the Churchill one.
Well, okay. I do now. It'll be fine. That
was wild. I was second wheel watching that unfold. So we came full gas in, big U-bolt, and what had happened has been a drag race between Rowe and Tony Martin. Came around the corner and Tony is like the nicest guy. Actually, both of them are really nice guys. But they're just so committed to their team that they're like, I'm willing to crash to make sure my guys are in the front. And both of them, just equal amounts of commitment, came into the same corner and they just went like smacked into each other. And we're like, I'm watching it. And I'm like, well, we've got to go. So we ride past, get to the bus, and then I like pulled her, and then someone like the car came up and goes, oh, we've got a bit of a problem here. Had a bit of a incident. And then you get to the finish and Tony's like the most calm, quiet talking guy. Like he'd be like, and he talks really quietly, so you have to listen. He'd be like, yes, we had a little come together. And you're like, what? And then you see the video and they're just like two massive units just fucking hooking each other, trying to take each other down at like 60k an hour.
We actually thinking of this, I'm just thinking about the sort out zone again. I had a maths teacher once at school, Mr. Sabato. He actually became a city councillor, I think. Good guy. But I had a fight in maths class once at high school. I don't know how it happened. I didn't want it to happen, but it happened. And
well, full on punch on.
Yeah, well, I was sitting at the, I can't even remember what happened, but I was sitting at my desk and I was like, and this guy, Gordon, I think his name was, just walked to the front of the room. And then as he walked back past me, he just fucking punched me in the face. And I was just like sitting there. So then, like, I got up and continued the altercation. And then Mr. Tabata, was it Mr. Tabata? Anyway, he doesn't listen to the show. He broke it up, and then he was like, he presented us with a sort out zone. Like, he was like, righto, let's go outside. We'll go behind the building, and like, I'll give you guys a couple minutes to sort it out. Like, in my eyes, it had already been sorted out because, like, we just had a full on punch on. I mean, you know, like, it was sorted out. There was nothing more to do. We're just going to continue doing the same thing. We didn't need to. But it was a real stand-up moment by him to present us with a sort-out zone. And that's how I think we should approach things in cycling.
You've opened up a can of worms here because my brain goes, what's the best fight story I remember from school? And it was a year above me. There was a teacher, Mr. Bond. He'd been there at the school for 35 years. And he never had a history of snapping or whatever. And this kid in the class is a real smart ass. And just this one day, old Bondy must have just had a fucking gutful. And they're having this argument over what's the most precious metal in the world. And Mr. Bond was claiming it was tin. And this smart ass was going, no, it's gold. And then he's going, no, it's tin. And this kid did the you're full of shit wank signal, like, yeah, tin. And Bondy's had enough and crow-pecked the kid. What's I went that, up behind man? Him like when you sort of knock on the top of the head like a crow peck. Uh-huh. Like the kid's sitting in his seat and just like crow pecked with his knuckle on this kid's head. I think it was like year nine. Apparently the whole class just went quiet. Like, did we just see Bondy crow peck the kid? And then everyone went quiet and then the kid just started like crying and then it just awkward. And then the bell rang not long after that and he said, oh, Mr. Daly, can you stay behind? And he said, yeah, and he made his mate Chubb stay as well. And then old Bondy, in a moment of panic, has just thrown $30 on the table. And he goes, all right, well, yeah, we'll sort of won't talk about that again, yeah? And he took the cash and then went home, told his mum. They told the school and that was it. Bondy, gone. Yeah,
see, again. Gone. Mr. Bondy presented this kid with a sword.
35 years, crow peck. Gone.
And like we said earlier, the sort out zone, you can sort it out in any way you want. You can play Sudoku, you can have a discussion, you can have a fight. Mr. Bond presented a sort out zone and his resolution was, let's sort it out with $30. The kid accepted the $30, went home, but then he didn't follow the rules of the sort out zone.
True.
I've got like
so five. He should be reprimanded, not Bondy.
Crow pick, the origins of crow pick. What does that mean? Is crow pick a drill?
Well, it's crow pick is just like a punch, like on crow pick, you punch him on the top of the head.
Okay,
like a magpie.
Yeah, like a magpie hit.
How big was Chubbs?
Chubbs was like solid, not we're talking year nine kids, but he was just there as muscle, like he needed a witness.
Yeah, okay, but and Chubbs as a nickname, you know, as a 9 year old.
No, Chubbs, he was chubby.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Chubbs. Yeah.
Third question is also vis-a-vis Tabashay. You've just exposed the child fighting ring.
No, because we didn't do it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But he wanted it to happen. He's like, right,
this is fight club. I think He wanted two men. He wanted,
right, boys, go at it.
No, we were at the age, we were at high school. We were like 17 years old.
Oh, okay.
So he was of the adage of like, you want to be men? Let's fucking raise. I'll raise you like men. Like I think it was right. I think it was the right move.
It's,
I mean, a lot of people listening to the show will strongly disagree with me, but I think that he was like, righto, you're men now, so let's be men. You know,
like my friend texted me the other day. What is it? If you're gonna piss on the porch like a puppy. I've lost the end of that. Well, someone will finish that. If you're on the porch like a puppy, you're going to bark. It was basically when it was snowing, it was -8 degrees, and I said, mate, are we riding today? And he goes, oh, if you want to piss on the porch like a puppy, something or other. And then I was like, yeah, right, fair enough. Let's go. Went out, and he's like, no, I'm not coming. It's too cold.
Yeah, what is that saying? I'm going to Google it now. Piss on the porch like a puppy. Isn't it like either get off the piss on the porch or get off it or something?
No, that's piss on the pot and... or piss off. Piss or get off the pot.
Something. Yeah, that's it.
All right, sort out zone. So, it's a good review.
If you can't run with it, if you can't run with a big dog, you better stay off the porch. You better stay on the porch. If you can't run with a big dog, you better stay on the porch.
No, did you Google piss on the porch like a puppy?
How long? Yeah, I did. That's exactly what
maybe
I wrote.
Maybe it's one of those automatic.
It says, how long can puppies hold their pee? Typically, a puppy can control their bladder for 1 hour for every month of age. So if your puppy is 2 months old, they can hold it for about 2 hours. It's interesting.
Well, there you go.
That can't be true, though, because if it's 12, it can't hold
if
on
for 12
hours. If
you go piss like a puppy, stay on the porch and let the big dogs eat.
That's good. Let the big dogs eat. Love it.
Fucking hell. All right.
You're right. Interesting. What?
What were we going to cover? Oh, we're going to talk about, we weren't. One thing I thought everyone was talking about in cycling this week, which I just got so fatigued on, was the Jumbo Visma aero helmets.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, oh, fuck, they're ruining cycling, this and that. But like,
look like the tip of dicks.
I've been described in a lot of ways, but it's first time.
They look like balance.
Yeah, okay, but if you had one, if you were in their position, you would wear it.
Yeah, well, yeah, because you have to.
No, because it saves you 5 seconds. Mate, I'd put a fucking strap on dildo on my head if I thought it was going to save me 5 seconds.
Well, that's true.
Was interesting, though? Like, they didn't do a good time trial.
Yeah, but there's no way they're not fast. I actually thought, I reckon I'm the only person that was like, I kind of rate those. Because I'm deep down in a TT hole at the moment, and I'm always thinking about how to like close this gap between, you know, I've got this spatial issue going on where my hand's too far away, and you go to this empty space you're trying to close. And I looked at that, and I mean, that would save all of my problems.
Mm.
Yeah, but
it's a pretty wild like testing. Imagine the first guy that pitched it. Imagine the first guy that comes in and goes, "Listen, I've got this helmet that looks like the tip of a penis, but 5 seconds.
Wasn't that the rocket that looked like a fella? Was it this Jeff Bezos' rocket?
Oh yeah.
It just looked, and it was like also like isn't it in Austin Powers when Dr. Evil, he takes off in like a car.
But did Jumbo wear those helmets at Paris?
Yep. Triple T.
They did. Mm. Yeah, right.
They it's like Spaceballs as well. That you seen the movie Spaceballs?
Yeah,
But as you said, where do they draw the line between aesthetically what looks good? You know what I mean?
Yeah, like because there's got to be as a manufacturer, there has to be some aesthetically. You would think, unless they're not going to be commercially available.
They just got the rules and went, "What's the limit of this rule? How much centimeters can it be there? How much can it be there?" And they've just gone, well, this actually fits, ticks every box, and it's speed. And at not one point did they consider, do I look like a pedophile?
No, but they've got to sell it, is what I'm saying, to other people, normal people.
Yeah, but once Jonas wins the TT in that helmet, they sell themselves. I mean, look at triathletes.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess if you buy an aero helmet, you're buying an aero helmet because you're worried about, your concern is how fast you go, not how you look.
Yeah, I've never seen someone put on a Yeah.
It might be different if you're buying if you're a weekend warrior and you want to buy, you look, have cool clothes, mm. then maybe yeah. you go, oh, I don't care if I'm fast.
In the history of helmets, would this go down as the most out there design ever?
No, well, because in the context,
it's just the same as it was in the 80s and the 90s and yeah. 90s probably, you know.
What about when Le Mans suddenly just showed up with yeah. an aero helmet and Fignon didn't even have a helmet on and he's that's riding right. along fucking yeah, ponytail fucking everywhere.
The skullet.
Had the aero bars. Le Mans had the yeah. aero bars too.
I mean, that in the context, it was so nothing's that radical anymore in the pursuit of speed. And I would be like, I think it's a very smart design. I'm on a hot take, in terms of speed and everything, I think it's like the OCD in me goes, oh, I like that. But so, I would be pissed if I was a designer. You bring out this helmet or launch or and then the UCI go, I saw some tweets that they didn't like it. We're going to review it.
Is the riders, it must be more comfortable, yeah, in that there's that one built-in lens or whatever, and it's sort of tailored so that you don't have
to... Yeah, it's like having a windscreen as opposed to a lens yeah, that's sweaty.
That's right.
Having a windscreen out in front of you.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense.
Still interesting that they lost... Vingegaard lost 20, 30 seconds or whatever it was to you, so... Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more goes into. Maybe he would have lost 37 seconds if he didn't have that helmet on.
I was going to say, on the people forget that he's 60 kilos and it's a 10-minute pan flat TT at close to 60K an hour. And when you're 60 kilos, it's all about – it doesn't matter. On a flat TT at that speed, your weight is almost irrelevant. So your relative yeah. power doesn't matter. So if you've got 8 kilos more or 6 kilos more, like Ayuso has, the absolute – power that Ayuso is going to be doing is probably close to at 6 watts a kilo, at 7 watts a kilo, it's probably close to about 40 watts. And that is worth 20 seconds, you know? So maybe it's all absolute power.
Yeah, exactly. But it didn't matter in the mountain.
Last episode, we had Daryl Impey on Bules, and all it was about is how good Israel are, how good your young guys are. It was just an Israel love fest.
Was that?
Where, Israel premiere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It was sickening. Where are you at, Bules?
Israel.
Is everything on target?
Yeah, we won again last night. We actually won first two stages of Tour of Taiwan with Itamar Einhorn, and then one of those young guys we speak of, Mason Holloman, won overnight.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the leaders jersey. So it's going well. We got a big block of racing coming up, though, as you know, classic starting. Just finished. Well, it's continuing the big block of racing. Just finished Paris Torino.
Yeah,
classic start Catalunya. Next week. Catalunya starts on.
We did some recon Monday. The other day, Jonesy. So Jules is in Andorra. Oh, we're all in Andorra. But there's four of us doing Catalunya that live here. So me, Woodsy, Shortsy, and Stevie Williams. And so Sam just go, oh, we're going to go recon the stage. Stage six.
Yeah.
And it's a big day. We meet in Andorra early, drive down to Berger, so close to our drive, hour and a half drive, do a 6-hour ride, and then drive an hour and a half home. So big day for the boys, but also for
kids. Yeah.
Volunteering to do this.
Yeah.
And two notes on it. One, I'd say it's the hardest stage I've ever seen in my life. Like it's profile filthy. Wise, like just numbers wise, it's really hard, but maybe there's existed harder. 150K, 4,200 meters climbing, something like that. But just not 1 meter of flat, not 1 meter of straight, small roads from the gun up, down. Like, but the best part was we get to the top of Pradell, the hardest climb, filthy climb. And we'd known that a guy had done the recon the day before and he always has a follow car, and on his driver, he said, like, oh, there we ran into some snow at the top of this climb and there's some barriers. And we're like, oh.
No, I didn't say barriers.
Oh, he didn't say barriers. That's right.
It was Carlos Verona. So he, you know, Carlos Jonesy. So he did recon the day before and he put on his Strava, like recon burger, snow. I had to get in the car for the last K of the climb in the first kilometer of the descent because of snow. But then he put a photo up and I was like, oh, it doesn't actually look that bad. But yeah, I can understand how you can't ride a bike over it, but you get a car across it, no problem.
Mm.
But unbeknown to me, he's the car that he has with him is like this fucking big four-wheel drive thing.
Well, I knew that because I see him. He has this Polo car every day in training, and it's just, it's like a Hilux.
Hmm. But I had a team car with like...
So you couldn't get up?
Oh, we got up.
So we start going up. We get to the thing, and we're like, oh, we can make it. And Sam's like, yeah, there's a couple of tire tracks. We sort of see a way. You know, we start going up, lose complete traction, just start sliding. And this, the car comes to a stop and then just starts eking backwards. Oh, and then no. I just hear the back door open and everyone's like bailing out the car. And I'm in the front seat like, what the fuck? And then Woodsy's like, yeah, you know, a lot of people die when the car starts going backwards. So I just wanted to get out.
And fair call. Like, fair enough. It was like 15% gradient as well. Oh. But we didn't slide that much. I had it under control. But it took some work to get it up there. And then we finally got over this hard bit of snow on this. It wasn't like that much snow, but it was on a 15% gradient, so it was just hard to get the traction. And then anyway, we got up it, and then it was actually pretty clear. And there was one more little bit of snow that on the first part of the descent, like Carlos had said in Ostrava, but was pretty manageable. Got through it all good. But then we got to the fucking gate, and where was the gate? It was closed and it was locked, and there was no way I was turning around and going back down. What I struggled to get up.
No.
So I had to punch this like little gap through the I had to go off road basically down this like snowbank. And then like we got to the bottom of the snowbank, and then there was a like a ditch. And I was like, but there was I couldn't get back up, and now I was fucking faced with this ditch. Thankfully the ditch was just narrow enough that we could get across. But it was
these stories that Ify used to tell when he was on the Tour de France. Like, he'd always have guests and that, and then he'd look at the map and he'd go, nah, we're going to get a shortcut and we're going to cut through this way. And he's had stories to get to, like, in front of the race, where one time he was driving through this rural area in France and this farmer was, like, offloading hay bales or whatever, and one of them caught on fire, and all of a sudden the whole middle of the road is just on fire. He's there with Ron Reed at the time. Ron Reed's like, John, fuck it, just turn around. And if it's like, no, like, Bules, I'm committed now, and just shut his eyes and drove through the flames at like 80k an hour. And he said, then it just opened up and we fucking got out. But yeah, just didn't give a shit.
Good day.
Yeah, it was a good recall.
All right, I'm done.
That's the next shirt. All right, I'm done.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
I'm gonna promote this episode on our socials, and I'm gonna the title on like the podcast platforms and the title on YouTube is gonna be shit episode. Enjoy.
Yeah. Before we go, I want to send a shout out to Novi. I was preparing for coming over to Europe for the big wedding of the year in October. And last time I was there for Heppy's, I got a spray from Novi at 2 a.m. saying, mate, you never messaged me. I thought we were like mates, you know? So I sent him a random, hey, just check it in, mate. Actually, I'm protecting myself so I can say in October when we chat, I message you in March. Thinking, you know, stick that up, yeah, getting one in. And he replies, yeah, well, you didn't reply to my last message. So, and I was like, what? And I scrolled it back. He'd sent a photo from the Irish. I remember I put my initials in. He goes, it's still here, mate. I just didn't reply. I've obviously looked
at it. You engraved your initials at the Irish bar in Gerona.
Yeah, on our table.
On the table, it's still there.
Yeah.
So I always wonder what Irish bar. Idiots do that.
Yeah.
Well, it's because we occupied that table for so many years. Like, we used to walk in and the bartender would kick whoever was off that table off it so we could sit there. It was just became our table under the table.
No, he always had a permanent reserve thing on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about today? Not in modern cycling.
Yeah. Anyway, shout out to Novi. Doing big things at Bora. Yep. Good on you, mate.
All right. Like, share, subscribe.